Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
Hi, folks. Welcome to Pop Talk. And, Mike, thank you very much for that introduction. And, yes, have we got a great show for you. A little bit of everything. We're going to be talking about ice melting. You ever think about that? I heard a story this morning that was really kind of unusual. It said that Antarctica is rising. Well, does that mean we're going to have a problem someplace else with ice melts? I've got some good stuff that you need to hear about. And we'll also find out a little bit or give you some tips on how you can find your way in the world. But then, you know, we all reach someplace that maybe we don't want to, but you know it's inevitable. The day we were born, I have said this on the air before, this is the day we start dying, you know, and we know we're going to reach it. We got no choice. Okay, folks, what happens after? Are you curious? Well, I sure am, and I've got someone who can really fill us in on the details. He's got the experience, he's got the know-how, and by golly, hopefully, he's got some answers for us. Well, hopefully it's the stairway to heaven, but we all have questions, you know. What is it going to be like after we pass from this realm? At some time in our lives, and we don't know when that is, I always used to say there's a calendar up in the sky, and it's got a number on it. And when our number comes up, it doesn't matter who you are, where you are, or what you're doing, that's your number. But we've got some people who are believers. We've got some people who are skeptics. Now, Dr. Evan Alexander was the latter. He was a real skeptic, a highly trained neurosurgeon. He knew that near-death, in his opinion, that near-death experiences feel real, but are simply fantasies produced by the brain under extreme stress, till it happened to him. After his own illness, it was a rare illness that attacked his brain, Dr. Alexander went from skeptic to believer and began his story with his first book called Proof of Heaven. Then came Seeking Heaven, Sound Journeys into the Beyond, The Map of Heaven, and Living in a Mindful Universe. Well, let's find out what his opinions are. Nice to have you with us, Dr. Alexander.
Well, Mary, it's great to be back. Thanks for having me on.
Well, absolutely. And I know you keep finding out all these different interesting things, like what the heck is a mindful universe? What do you mean by that?
What it really means is that the universe is self-aware. And this is something that goes beyond human consciousness. This is something that has existed since before the Big Bang. I mean, it was part of the creation of the universe. And yet this God force or God mind that we're talking about is really one that is a kind of differentiated out into each and every one of our minds when we're in these physical bodies. But the interesting thing is there's a lot of evidence from a scientific viewpoint that that the brain is not the creator of consciousness, but merely a transceiver that allows for that primordial mind to put off a little eddy current offshoot that becomes the consciousness that we have. The interesting thing is when the brain and body die, instead of consciousness going to zero, which is what the conventional materialist position would predict, it's actually liberated to a much higher level where we reconnect with souls of departed loved ones, with that God force at the core of the universe, relive our lives, you know, life reviews of something that have been around as a concept for more than 2,400 years. And the life review is very revealing because it shows us that when we experience those things, we don't experience them from our ego perspective, but from a kind of an overview perspective that shows us we're sharing the dream of the one mind. So all of this kind of scientific revolution about the brain-mind connection is very kind of positive in terms of human existence, because it implies that our souls do extend beyond the life of a physical body.
However,
and not just that, but when our loved ones have left, they're still connected to us.
I do have to interrupt you, and just for one reason. I've talked to a lot of people who've had near-death experiences over the years. I've been doing this for 4 decades. However, they're not all the same. Some see a tunnel. Some see family. Some see, you know, a universe or a connection with God. Why is it all so different? Why don't we all reach the same way, at least getting in, you know, into that realm and then move on?
Well, what I will say is that all near-death experiences are always tailored for the individual who has them. There's no other reason for their existence. So they can vary a lot, just as if, you know, if we took 10 people and teleported them to Paris and randomly distributed them and then brought them back 24 hours later, they'd all have a very different story to tell, even though there's only one Paris. And I promise you, the spiritual realm is far vaster than any physical place. And yet the interesting thing is that the evidence, for example, for reincarnation from a scientific viewpoint is indisputable. If you go to University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies, and people can go to uvadops.org to learn a lot more, you'll find they've been writing about past life memories in children suggestive of reincarnation for more than 6 decades. And of the 2,500 cases they studied, 1,700 have been solved. That is, they actually found a person who lived before. But the interesting thing is that near-death experiences kind of reflect for most of us what it looks like to have that kind of expansion of consciousness. And near-death experiences are not uncommon. Probably somewhere around 5 to 8% of the population has had a profound NDE. Something like 20% of cardiac arrest patients end up having a near-death experience. And when you study them in large numbers, they seem to have regular features that suggest that it really is a true realm that we visit.
But what about those?
For the individual.
What about those who don't have any experience and then they come back? Does that mean they're not in a good place? I mean, what's happening to them?
I think they would remember. For example, I think our notions of hell come from life reviews of people who were so busy handing out pain and suffering to other people when they have to be on the receiving end of that during a life review, which is exactly what happens in the life review, is we experience what we've dealt out to others from their perspective. And it's a reliving, not just a remembering. But those life reviews can have a very positive effect. Unless, you know, it was really all that pain and suffering handed out to other people, it might be a hellish life review. So they even those negative experiences nudge us towards love, compassion, kindness, mercy, acceptance, all the lessons that come from a positive NDE, but they also come in those relatively unusual negative NDEs. But the important thing is that when you study them in large numbers, you start seeing common patterns. And not only that, but there's work. People often complain that, you know, near-death experiences don't die. I want to know what happens when I die. Well, for that, I would steer you to the work of Christopher Kerr, K-E-R-R, Hospice Buffalo. He wrote a beautiful book about 5 or 6 years ago. It's called Death is But a Dream. And all he writes about are terminal care patients, you know, hospice patients, et cetera. And it turns out they have the same kind of life review elements as they approach death as are described in near-death experiences. So it's a very common pattern of reconnecting with souls of those who've left this world, doing so in a way that allows us to make amends, learn lessons, and then proceed to the next incarnation. But it's a much bigger theater of operations than I ever would have thought from my conventional Methodist upbringing in a church in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But it is pretty much indisputable that our conscious awareness continues. Anybody who doubts that can read 29 scientific essays supporting the reality of the afterlife at BigelowInstitute.org. And I would highly recommend people start reading those free essays. You will find the answers are already there from a scientific fashion, but the afterlife and reincarnation are absolutely real.
But honestly, why did it take such a big kick in your you know what, to make you believe? I mean, you were an intelligent man. You were a neurosurgeon. You had all these people with other experiences. And then all of a sudden, you just turned off to it until you actually died? But you didn't really die. It was a near death, right?
Having the personal experience certainly helps. But I can tell you, if people read our third book, Living in a Mindful Universe, that's the book co-written with my wife and partner, Karen Newell. If you read that book, which delves into quantum physics, into parapsychology and non-local consciousness, into all the evidence for unity of consciousness, for example, the binding of a problem in the philosophy of mind, you'll realize that all of this is an argument that's very much based in empirical data and rational argument. And why everyone doesn't remember an NDE, I don't know how to explain that exactly, but the fact that 20% of cardiac arrest patients remember an NDE is a huge number of people. So it's a large body of data that cannot simply be dismissed. And I think it's often just a problem of beliefs and of memory. I think that some people come back and just don't remember the events of an NDE. And the evidence for that, for example, comes from the study of childhood NDEs. Very young children can have a near-death experience where they don't remember a spiritual journey. And then many years later, they can have another NDE or go through hypnotic regression or meditation and start recovering memories of a spiritual encounter during their NDE that were not there in their memory when they first came back.
Huh.
We're not necessarily meant to always bring this knowledge back to this world. But that's why NDEs are so remarkable, because they show that we can bring the information back. And there's a whole other category, which are called shared death experiences, which happen to perfectly healthy people, usually a loved one, a relative of someone who's dying. And they might be 1,000 miles away from the person who's dying, but when that soul leaves the body, they come through and grab the soul of the bystander, who might even witness a full-blown life review, and then the bystander soul comes back to this world, to someone who could be a healthcare worker, but usually is a family member, a loved one. And shared-death experiences have many of the same features of near-death, and yet you cannot default to the conventional materialist pseudo-explanations, of deprived oxygen in the brain or buildup of CO2 and somebody who's dying. But in a shared death experience, that bystander soul is usually in a very healthy body. And yet to have the very same kind of experience, even witnessing a full-blown life review, is a stunning thing to occur. And for people who want to learn more about shared death experiences, I would recommend either Raymond Moody's book, Glimpses of Eternity, which is all about shared death experiences, came out, I think, about 2011, or follow the work of William Peters. And if you Google Shared Crossing Project, he's out in Santa Barbara, and you'll find he's a social worker who's been working with dying patients for decades and has actually come up with ways for people to enhance their chance of having a shared death experience with a loved one. So it's a very practical focus that he has. But again, William Peters, and he wrote a book called At Heaven's Door, came out about 4 or 5 years ago. I highly recommend that book, too. But it's all about shared death experiences.
Okay, I've got to ask you this, because I've had encounters with scientists on the air, and they say, you believe in something in the afterlife, and that's because you have faith. It's not necessarily anything that you can prove to me. Now, I've used this example, and I want to throw it at you and see what you think, if it's a way to explain it to a scientist who doesn't believe in, spiritual types of things. I said, what are we made of? Energy. Okay, yeah, we are. Our bodies are energy. And give me the definition of energy. And they say, energy always was, always will be. It changes forms, but it never goes away. I said, when I was a little Catholic girl in about fourth grade, and I had my little catechism in my hand, and that was the description of God. Always was, always will be. Not created, not destroyed. So what makes you think that once this body, which is nothing but material, goes away, that the energy doesn't go on and it just changes forms? What do you think?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I would say it's more information than energy. So information is, the history of our lives, what we've done in our lives. That's why the life review is so important. And that's why when I explained that in that afterlife realm, it's not just a remembering, a vague sepia-tinted remembering of events of your life, but about a third of people who have had life reviews describe them as reliving of the events of one life. In fact, I saw an account not long ago where this person said they could even count the mosquitoes in the air during an event that happened while they were drowning as a young child. I mean, that is a reliving of events when you get that kind of incredible detail. And of course, if people haven't experienced this kind of phenomenon, they might have doubts about it. But the reality is scientists who study these claims and also study quantum physics and telepathy and remote viewing, all the evidence for non-local consciousness, those scientists have gone a long way towards proving the reality of the afterlife and reincarnation. In fact, if you study that literature from the University of Virginia on reincarnation data, you come away realizing it was carefully done, and reincarnation is absolutely a part of human existence. Whether you believe in it or not doesn't matter. It's what are the facts support, and the facts in these 2,500 cases that they've studied, of which 1,700 have been solved, that is, they actually found the person who lived before, that's a major scientific database of real, you know, reality. And, you know, materialism is our conventional scientific worldview. Physicalism is another name for it. And that's what we were all trained in the 20th century and early 21st century. And yet all this data was accumulating that proved that materialism is false. In fact, the Nobel Prize in Physics in 2022 for entanglement is one of the biggest statements yet from the Nobel Prize Committee, that the four-dimensional space-time that that Newton and Einstein worship so much is not the be-all and end-all of information transfer in the universe. Subatomic particles that are created together have a way of communicating across space and time in ways that we do not understand, that has a lot to do with the mental field of the universe.
Now let's back up a little bit, because for those people who may not have heard the interviews that you and I have done, tell them what actually happened. You were a neurosurgeon. You kind of poo-pooed the stuff that your patients said that they had experiences till it happened to you. What actually happened? You had it was a brain illness, right? A rare disease.
It was, and I'll be very brief because it can take a long time to go into detail. Anybody who wants to know more can go to evanalexander.com. to learn a whole lot more.
Okay.
But basically, and there's a case report on my medical records. It's very important because it affirms and validates much of what I said in Proof of Heaven and goes beyond it, because the three doctors who wrote the case report that came out in Journal of Nervous and Mental Diseases in February 2018 were not involved in my care, but were fascinated by my recovery. And in fact, they made the case in that case report that my brain, given the severe bacterial meningoencephalitis that afflicted all lobes of my brain, left no place in my brain for any kind of dream or hallucination to occur. My entire neocortex, the human part of the brain, was terribly afflicted from this illness in the first few hours. And I spent a week in coma due to this illness. And in fact, when the peer review editors of the scientific journal challenged the three doctors who wrote it and said, how do you explain this recovery? It's unprecedented in the medical literature, somebody that sick from that kind of bacterial meningoencephalitis to have a full recovery. And they said it's because he had a near-death experience. They knew of other similar cases of profound near-death experiences resulting in healing that goes far beyond our Western medical expectations for healing.
So why these
are such important cases.
What did you see? What did you experience? What was it like? I'm curious.
I'll give you a very quick and simple description of it. First of all, important to point out that an unusual feature of my NDE, I've never heard of this feature being this prominent in other NDEs, but it surely wasn't mine, that's amnesia. I had no memory of Evan Alexander's life, no knowledge of this earth, this universe. An empty slate is the best way to put it. And that was a crucial thing, especially for a rationalist scientist having a profound NDE to show him anything about consciousness that would lead him more towards the truth and away from his misconceptions. And that's why I had to have this complete amnesia. The journey started what I call Earthworm's Eye View, a primitive course on responsive realm, but I was led up through a portal of light and music up into this brilliant ultra-real gateway valley That's the place where our life reviews would happen, where we reunite with souls of departed loved ones, with that God force and with other angelic forces, what have you. All that would happen in that intersection point that I call the Gateway Valley. And for me, it had many Earth-like features. I was a speck of awareness on a butterfly wing with a beautiful young woman who is my spiritual guide. And those who've read the book Proof of Heaven will realize how 4 months after my coma, when I finally discovered the identity of that beautiful woman on the butterfly wing, it forced me into acknowledging the reality of the entire journey. But she was just there as a mystery while it all unfolded. And, of course, angelic choirs and that Gateway Valley provided yet another kind of musical light portal of higher and higher levels. I remember seeing all of four-dimensional space-time collapsing down, all of that spiritual realm, which has complete access to birth, death, everything in between, even past lifetimes, future lifetimes, etc., apparent in that Gateway Valley. But I ascended from all that up into the core realm. The core realm is a complete resolution of all dualities and a becoming of pure oneness and appreciation of the binding force of love that's at the core of that cosmic God consciousness, which I found in the core realm to be at the core of my own consciousness. Now, it turns out I would go through these multiple levels several times. I had to learn lessons of remembering musical melodies, etc., to learn that I could actually navigate these spaces. But then there came a point where I could no longer conjure up that melody to take me up into the core realm, that ultimate home of the divine, of that God consciousness. And to say I was sad at that moment would be an understatement, but I also knew I could trust that I would be taken care of. And that's when I saw thousands of beings going off around me, heads bowed, a murmuring energy coming from them that was kind of guiding me back to the earthly realm. And that I called the power of prayer. And then the final event that I describe in my NDE was seeing six faces that would bubble up out of the muck. They might say a few words and disappear. I still had no language or no understanding of our language. So when they would say those words, I didn't know what they were saying. But they were ultimately leading me back to this world and also serving as what are called veridical time anchors, because five of the six people present in that final scene in my NDE were people who were physically present the last 24 to 48 hours of my coma in the ICU room. So they helped me to prove that the vast majority of the coma journey had to happen between days 1 and 4 or 1 and 5 of my seven Earth day coma. But it seemed like I was there for months or years. It was an extraordinary in-depth and detailed journey of spiritual discovery. And coming back to it, I've now used meditation many a time. I meditate an hour or two a day. I've used meditation to return. And people who want to learn about meditation, I would strongly encourage the mode that I use is Sacred Acoustics. You'll find out at sacredacoustics.com. It uses binaural beat brainwave entrainment. And it's a very powerful way to shut down the little ego voice in your mind and allow yourself to open up to that much richer connection to primordial mind that all of us have, certainly when we leave the physical body, but that we can actually experiment with in meditation and centering prayer while we're still in these bodies.
Why do you think they sent you back?
Oh, well, I think like Somi has come back to basically reveal to this world that we're spiritual beings in a spiritual universe. It's much grander than this tiny little theater of operations that we see in our material world. But all of us are much more important than just these physical bodies. And that is, I think, why NDEs are here to illuminate kind of consciousness and the mental aspects of the universe and a shared sense of meaning and purpose that we have. And that ultimately, it's really about restoring unconditional love, kindness, mercy, acceptance, and forgiveness to ourselves and to our fellow beings in this world. Our false sense of separation that comes from materialist thought has been very damaging. In fact, it's why our world is on such a precipice now with threats of warfare, climate change, etc. And yet the pathway forward can be very refreshing and invigorating when we acknowledge that we're spiritual beings that are all connected and we're here to take care of each other, take care of the least, the last, and the lost. And although it might be politically kind of unpopular these days, we need to take care of refugees and people who are fleeing from violence and warfare around this country and do the best we can to help our fellow beings. And I think that's really the main message that's coming from the NDE community, and especially from the scientists who study near-death experiences, who also study many other aspects of human consciousness. But it's really about trying to get back on the right track. And materialism and its false sense of separation and all the greed and narcissism that's inherent in that is not a positive way forward for the civilization and for individuals at large.
So does it transcend religion?
Absolutely. You don't need religion. Now, religion, of course, can be useful. Some people can get great spiritual growth from centering prayer and meditation based in religious thought. But I would point out that, sadly, religions have had more than 5,000 years to teach us the golden rule that, treat others as you would like to be treated, which is the lesson of life reviews and near-death experiences. And yet, religious ideologies sometimes can be conflicting. So I would say, to the extent that any religion can fully support love, kindness, compassion, mercy, acceptance, forgiveness, and is all-inclusive, does not claim to be an exclusive club, but is all-inclusive, that religion should prosper and flourish. But to the extent that any religion is talking about warfare, violence, hurting others, harming others in any way, that religion has obviously been taken over by egotistical, narcissistic people on this planet who are serving their own purposes and not serving the original, basically suggestion of the prophets of ancient time, that we're really here to manifest love, kindness, compassion, and take care of each other. It really couldn't be a simpler message, and I think that's what NDEs are in this world to do today.
How do
to
you
help us start living together more harmoniously?
But yeah, but you know, you still we've got so much hate and polarization right now, especially, and I'm just going to use our own country. It's all over the world, but so much here in this country. Why can't we get to that point? I love Star Trek, and I love, the idea that you transcend material types of things and you meet other people and other species, etc. But we're not doing that right now. It seems to be getting worse, not better.
Well, that's because people use kind of evil and fear as political tools, and that is wrong. That's simply wrong. We all have the power to go within, centering prayer, deep meditation. As I said, if you need a tool to quiet that monkey mind voice in your head, the ego mind, and get much more in touch with your higher soul, I would suggest trying sacredacoustics.com. If you go there, you'll see what I mean. Just download and start listening to those tones. Let yourself ride those tones, follow your breathing, and you will be elevated out of this world to a much more peaceful, harmonious existence. So it's that we haven't given it a chance. And if we sit there and follow the news and simply follow these political leads, there's lots of conspiracy theories and kind of hatred and fear-mongering out there, but that doesn't have to be our own personal truth. You have to be careful of what you believe, where your information sources are, even be careful of what you think, because a lot of evil and negative thoughts about other people will come back to haunt you in that life review, if not sooner in your life. So from my perspective, it's much easier to start to cultivate a lifetime where you can harvest love, the love of the universe for yourself, love in a sense of purpose and meaning shared with your fellow beings, and then start sharing that with your neighbors and with other people you encounter in this world. Just start bringing that goodness and love from that meditative and centering prayer space into this world at large.
But you know,
we're not here to compete and fight with each other and have war with each other.
Well, that's what we're supposed to. I know what we're supposed to do, but that's not in the history of humanity. It's never been that way. And look at, how do you feel about artificial intelligence? It's coming of age. They're using it politically. They're using it spiritually. All these kinds of things, and we don't even know what's real anymore. I've said it on the air. You may hear me, and you think it's the Pop Talk radio show, and that it's Mary Jane Pomp. It may not be. It could be AI imitating me? I mean, it's gotten to a point where we don't even know who's real and who's not.
Well, I think we do have to be careful about AI. Currently, you know, I've been following AI for decades. We had it around in medicine in the form of what were called expert systems, even back in the 1980s, and watched the evolution of that. Now we have these large language models. And essentially, I would say most of what we've seen from large language models, say from Google and Microsoft, et cetera, have been embarrassing kind of examples of artificial stupidity more than anything. I haven't seen anything that, to me, looks like, oh, my God, maybe we're truly talking about intelligence here, although I do believe it's possible. But I also think that we need to be careful and have guardrails, because if that truly happens, and again, I'm not talking about self-aware machines. I'm absolutely not talking about conscious machines, but about artificial intelligence, which doesn't have any kind of self-awareness at all. And in fact, modern versions tend to hallucinate a lot. They tend to work themselves into such incredibly kind of non-real, non-truthful territory that everybody realizes they're artificial and they're not intelligent. So that's kind of the state of the art right now. But you point out we have to be careful because of where all this is headed. And people could use it for very nefarious purposes, even if it's not a very sophisticated form of true intelligence.
Well, you know, you wonder, though, because I've had scientists who are into the research. They actually are with the AI, et cetera. And my main question is, you know, I remember Data on Star Trek, The Next Generation. And it was Data always wanted to be human because he wanted to have the feelings. And then they had to decide whether he could have sentience. So I asked some of these researchers, could it possibly be that they will reach sentience? And there's always... Honestly, Dr. Alexander, they take this pause, and then all of a sudden they'll say, we don't know. And when people say we don't know, that means to me you probably do, or at least you suspect what might be happening. What do you think?
Well, I think that they really are in the dark. And the problem is we really don't know how to define consciousness in terms of being able to identify it with an absolute yes or no answer existing in a machine, for example. Now, there is the old Turing test, you know, that comes from Alan Turing, who helped crack the Enigma program in World War II, the British computer scientist, who came up with a test. And his idea was, if you're on a teletype and you can't tell if you're teletyping to a human or to a computer, then maybe it passes the Turing test. And, of course, the Turing test has nothing to do with sentience or self-awareness. It's simply an expert system that's good enough at answering that it knows, you know, the answer to a question, so it appears human. But I think we need a far more sophisticated test of, for example, I used to say a year or two ago that I thought if a computer could actually do a really good self-deprecating stand-up comedy routine, potentially that would be showing us some actual self-awareness and intelligence. But the Turing test itself is far too weak in terms of demanding for sentience and self-awareness.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, I mean, they already are producing new chess moves that have never been done by humans before. They're doing soccer plays that have never been done by coaches, et cetera. Doesn't that mean they're thinking?
No, it doesn't. I mean, in fact, Deep Blue, you know, the IBM supercomputer that beat the human world chess champion a few decades ago, that computer was not doing any thinking at all. All it was doing was with a high CPU complexity and with vast amounts of memory and a very rapid clock speed in the computer, it was able to examine billions and billions and billions of moves into the future for any one move it takes now to make the choice of which is the best move to make now. So it's not thinking. It's not aware at all. It's simply examining a tremendous number of rules or moves very rapidly and then just selecting the one that leads to a victory. Huh. So that's not self-awareness. That's not intelligence. But it's able to do that one task of, you know, beating a human at chess very effectively.
Now, when going back to your crossing over, were you whole body or were you part of a spirit or part of the universe? What was it like? I mean, you were self-aware. You knew who you were, right?
Well, all I knew was that I existed. Okay. I had no notion whatsoever of Evan Alexander. There was never the thought of, uh-oh, is Evan Alexander dying? This was simply, you know, a completely self-contained episode that was to demonstrate many things about brain and memory and mind and the nature of reality to me. That's what was going on. Now, your questions, though, are very interesting. At no point did I have any body awareness at all during any of my seven-day journey. Nothing. 0.0. None at all. But in the core realm, you know, I described going from the earth on my view through that beautiful ultra-real Gateway Valley up until to the oneness of that core realm. And in that core realm, my awareness became identical with the awareness of the universe, of that creative God force of the universe at large. In fact, I came to realize that all of us, our conscious awareness is directly sourced in that God force. That's why near-death experiences can even happen, that when we dive deep into that kind of mental realm and go back and re-experience our lives from this much grander perspective that's outside of space and time, we're actually able to kind of witness this kind of oneness of our very existence and how it connects with all the rest of the universe. So it's an extraordinary sense of conscious awareness, but being identical to the mind of the universe itself. I mean, that's really the best way to put it. But it was a tremendous range of kind of experience going from the very lowest to the very highest. And what I went through in that journey during my NDE. And that is something that I've been able to duplicate to some degree in my meditation using sacredacoustics.com. And as I said, I meditate an hour or two a day. I've been doing that for more than 12 years now. Very powerful technique. And sometimes I've been able to re-enter that realm, although never have I seen that ultra-reality that I saw in the Gateway Valley to the full extent that I saw it during my near-death experience.
However, did you want to come back? I mean, if I would have that kind of experience, I'd go, why would I want to come back?
Well, you know, the truth be told, what I recognize very strongly, and this is an important point to make so people don't make a mistake, and that is that our Christian upbringing that taught me, you know, it's one birth, existence in a body in this life and then eternal heaven or hell is incorrect. It takes more than one lifetime to ascend to that oneness with the divine. And in fact, that's where the reincarnation data is so absolutely critical when you realize what an essential key that is to all of this. So in other words, some people might be tempted to commit suicide. If that world is so beautiful and loving, why not just leave this one forever? But succeed at suicide, what you find out in your life review is there was a tremendous amount of love for you here in the first place, and then you have to rebundle whatever the challenging issues were in this life to all together in the next life and go through it again. So I'd much rather make progress in this life and have my next life be many steps forward from this in terms of my ascendance towards oneness with the divine. And that's where it's so critical to get that reincarnation is a huge part of the picture, and that you can't just off yourself from this world and expect to sit around playing a harp on a cloud all day. You know, of course, there is no time as we witness it in that realm. That's another thing that's so important to point out about life reviews. I mean, if you recognize that in that realm, you can experience birth, death, everything in between simultaneously, you're starting to get the picture that really is completely outside of our earth time and space. The time and space of our material realm is only a construct in which, you know, the drama can unfold. But ultimately, we're spiritual beings that are much more keyed in to that far grander existence of that universal mind that I'm talking about in our third book, Living in a Mindful Universe.
Okay, but your first book, Proof of Heaven, is there a proof of hell?
Well, some people have tried to prove that. They do it from a negative NDE. And again, what I always point out is, from my perspective, hellish NDEs are incomplete. If I had just gone to the earth or my view and come back to this world, I would have had a hellish or negative NDE. They represent about 3 to 5% of all reports on NDEs, so the vast majority of them are much more pleasant and rewarding and kind of heavenly. But important to point out that even those negative NDEs can have a very positive effect. If somebody has been just selfish and greedy and narcissistic, and then they have a profound hellish NDE where they're on the receiving end of all that greed and narcissism, they might come back to this world and be a much kinder, gentler, more loving person. That's a positive change. That's what you get out of the positive NDEs too. So just because we describe it as a hellish or negative NDE doesn't mean it didn't have a very beautiful and endearing and positive effect on the person who went through it if they were, you know, quite the jerk before.
So do we ever, maybe, I've had some people say that they get a glimpse of what, you know, heaven or the other side is, and but they're not really dead yet. They have a glimpse, though, of being able to see. Do you believe in that?
Absolutely. And again, this is why I encourage people, start getting into meditation or centering prayer, going within mind. Once you realize that your mental space is not simply, you know, the result of a 3.5-pound gelatinous mass trapped between your ears inside your skull, but that in fact your mental space has access to the entire universe, that's when you start starting to see the power of it. Going within is engaging with that mind of the universe in ways that can be very, very instructive, very informative, and also very helpful in navigating our lives and kind of determining our sense of meaning and purpose, and in starting to live a life that reflects that knowledge that we're here for a reason.
Gotcha. So this, hopefully, there's a difference between religion and spirituality, correct?
Yeah, spirituality is a very native part of who we are that informs us that we're more than just a physical body here, birth to death. And I would say essentially that is the concept of soul. And in many ways, what all of this discussion is about, and certainly what our book, Living in a Mindful Universe, is about, is trying to more fully flesh out this notion of the soul and our souls being part of soul groups and our souls being part of the purpose of the universe, and that it all is something that extends beyond the death of the physical body. And I think that's very important because our culture is very kind of intoxicated over this notion of death and the kind of finality or bleakness around the end of existence that some people think from false materialist beliefs to be the case. But really, this opens the door to a much grander vision of self, purpose over multiple lifetimes, especially when we come to recognize that the deepest, most profound lesson coming from the near-death experience community is we all need to love ourselves and love others unconditionally. Kindness, compassion, and mercy are absolutely critical parts of our existence, and this is all about our spirituality. Some people can use religion to get there. That's wonderful if you do. But again, to the extent that any religion is working away from love and compassion and kindness, that religion has lost its way and needs to be discarded. But to the extent that religions can preserve and enhance a sense of loving others and not being exclusive to anybody, recognizing that this also applies to the animal and plant world. I mean, animals are a rich part of the spiritual existence of this world. And so we need to start acknowledging that, too. And ultimately, that will affect how we do, for example, farming and diet. These things are influenced by these concepts. And it's not against the rules of life that animals eat other animals, because that's part of the natural order. But absolutely, I would say the way that humans treat animals in the farming industry with the caging and all of this, I think we'll end up rejecting those as kind of non-spiritual modes of interaction with our animal colleagues.
What does God mean to you?
God is the origin of conscious awareness. And ultimately, when expressed in its purest form, that is a force of love, of kindness and compassion and acceptance. It's a spiritual home. I mean, that's the thing that was so shocking to me. When I went through my experience described in the book Proof of Heaven, my near-death experience, was how much it felt like home. It was familiar. It was like, oh my God, finally back. Even though I, you know, my memories of Evan Alexander's life and my ego memories were not available to me, but a much richer sense of existence that transcends one bodily incarnation was absolutely crystal clear. So just a beautiful gift. That God force is something all of us can find within. And it is a force of love and compassion, kindness, a force that brings us back home and that reassures us and loves us unconditionally.
What about people, and I've had some people on the air, especially caregivers, that they say at the time of death, with some patients, not all, the death, there was like a puff of something, smoke or whatever you want to call it, that would leave the body when they died. Would you call that the soul?
Well, I think that might be evidence of a soul, although the exact nature of the observation differs from case to case to case. In our book, The Map of Heaven, we actually describe a number of those kind of cases. And these were from emails and other communications that people sent me after Proof of Heaven came out and after they heard me talk about that Proof of Heaven story. But a lot of that is included in the book Map of Heaven. It makes the case that, you know, science, religion, and ordinary people are proving the afterlife, too. But it's especially the book Living in a Mindful Universe that really goes the distance to unite the science and spirituality in the modern era. I will also point out that there's a 10th anniversary edition of the book Proof of Heaven, and that edition also has 36 additional pages, and a lot of that describes what's happened since Proof of Heaven came out and the scientific revolution that is really inevitable around all of this evidence and rational argument that proves, yes, the afterlife and reincarnation are real. Now we just have to work into how we understand it. But luckily for the individual, the pathway forward is quite clear. Using meditation and centering prayer to connect with these same forces is very much possible. The scientific revolution is one that is happening and is inevitable. And again, a reminder to anybody out there who wants the scientific proof, go read those 29 essays or start with the first place essay by Jeffrey Mishlove at BigelowInstitute.org. And there are some very scientific essays in that collection. Bernardo Kastrup, Penn Van Lommel, Dean Radin, Julie Beischel, many others. I don't want to leave anybody out, but a lot of scientists have contributed to BigelowInstitute.org to a tremendous body of knowledge that proves the reality of the afterlife, and if you're reading the details, also proves the reality of reincarnation.
Now, I also have to ask, this is a little off subject, but still it fits in. Do you believe in life on other planets? I mean, we've got other universes, other galaxies. It goes on and on.
Well, yes, I think it's quite clear, just given the sheer magnitude of the universe, that there are billions, if not, even more advanced civilizations out there. I assume there are a few in the Milky Way. The biggest problem is where we are with them time-wise, not only space-wise. Space is mighty big, but also the interest level. You know, we've been putting radio waves off this planet for about 130 years now.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not very long.
Yeah.
And that's about the biggest announcement that we're technologically present. And you can only imagine where, a civilized species that's 10,000 or a million or 100 million years ahead of us might be, but far beyond our inept little bumbling around space and time. I'm certain that, we end up being far better managers of energy, space, time, and causality as we get more advanced. But to me, there's also a higher dimensional space. In fact, Bernard Carr is a British scientist. He actually did his postdoc work under Stephen Hawking. So Bernard Carr is a brilliant scientist. And he's been working on higher dimensional models of reality. For example, taking string theory, but although he's not really relying so much on string theory, but string theory is certainly a modern scientific focus where you have higher dimensional spaces involved, and Bernard Carr also entertains higher dimensions of time. And it could be that some of the intelligence that we're seeing, and that might even present as UAP phenomena, might be from other dimensional spaces. So it's not only that I'm quite certain that we have other civilizations in our four-dimensional space-time, but I believe that there could easily be higher dimensional beings that are an explanation for much of what we encounter now in the NDE world and the UAP world, you know, UFOs, et cetera. So it's just that, you know, our knowledge is very limited, and we need to admit that we're quite ignorant and need to open our minds to greater possibilities in order to more fully come into understanding truth about the nature of reality.
Now, just out of curiosity, I've talked to some scientists who believe that there are other dimensions. Maybe even we are in that other dimension, slightly different, maybe doing different things, but we have dimensions within us. Do you believe in that?
Well, I think that's all part of when you're talking higher dimensions, we're talking about this universe that we live in, and that includes the one that where you and I have physical bodies resident. I will point out, it's very important to stress here, that one of the reasons science got it so wrong in the 20th century, that is materialist science, was they kept thinking they were assessing this kind of naked reality. But what quantum physics is very clear on is there is no objective physical universe that is independent of the observing mind. That is a critical piece of getting it, is admitting that what we're witnessing is the inside of our own consciousness. It's not some naked reality out there. And this is a critical part of making the next leap of understanding the primacy of consciousness. And how the brain can just be a filter that allows that primordial God mind to differentiate out into these little eddy currents of apparent consciousness that we think are kind of unified and isolated when they're in us. And yet when the physical brain and body die, we realize that they have connection with minds that are at a distance and people still alive, and also with minds of those who have left the physical plane. So this is why exploration of that mental aspect of ourselves is so critical to start understanding what this is all about, because all of the physical ultimately emerges from the mental. And this is where things like placebo effects, spontaneous remission, and miraculous healing and near-death experiences starts to take on a new power as we understand our free will is alive and well in this world of the primacy of the mental.
Gotcha.
And the world that goes beyond just idealism, which is noting that mind is, you know, has a big role in determining what happens in the universe. But I would say to evolutionary panentheism, the notion that that God force is in all of us, that mental component, and yet it's evolutionary. We all as sentient beings provide direction to where the unfolding reality is headed.
Gotcha.
And that's a crucial concept to put in too.
Now, if they want to find out more about Dr. Eben Alexander, where do they go to?
Go to ebenalexander.com to learn a lot more. You can find the books there. You can find a tremendous amount of information there, a recommended reading list, a lot of hot links to the scientific papers. It's all organized. There's an FAQ page at ebenalexander.com that's very important. There's also a free 33-day email journey called Your Journey into the Heart of Consciousness. You'll find that at the entry page at ebenalexander.com. Also, I highly recommend sacredacoustics.com for people who want to learn more about meditation. And also, innersanctumcenter.com, I-N-N-E-R, sanctumcenter.com. If you go there, you'll see what I mean. Multiple opportunities. Some do involve a cost, for example, a mental health practitioner course we did with Dr. Anna Usum, the author of Fulfilled, and that course is available for professionals. But also there's a monthly webinar we do with our fans at InnerSanctumCenter.com, and also more than 50 interviews we did with thought leaders in the world consciousness revolution during the pandemic, and those 50-plus interviews are available for free at InnerSanctumCenter.com. So there's a lot there, a lot of material that people can interact with. You don't have to spend any money at all. You know, You can get access to a lot of this information for free. So just trying to get people up to speed on this revolution to bring peace, love, and harmony into their lives.
Fantastic.
And into the world at large.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. Alexander, as always. And we have more time to talk today than we have in the past, and I really do appreciate that. And, of course, your books, Proof of Heaven, The Map of Heaven, and Living in a Mindful Universe. And I hope you'll come back and visit again, because this is to be continued.
Well, I'd love to. I love your conversation, Mary. Thanks so much. You've led this in a beautiful direction. And, yes, I would like to talk again as soon as your listeners.